This week on Living Planet, we're doing something a little different. Instead of our regular episode, we're bringing you the first part of a gripping investigative series that's making waves across Europe. It's called Boy Wasted, and it's a three-part environmental true crime investigation presented by journalists Dan Ashby and Lucy Taylor. It's produced by ENDS Report, Journalism Fund Europe, and De Groene Amsterdammer. In this series, Dan and Lucy join forces with a team of award-winning reporters from across the continent to uncover the truth behind a shocking discovery: the body of a boy found hidden in a bale of recycled plastic in Turkey. What begins as a mystery soon spirals into a dangerous investigation stretching across borders, exposing a secret global scandal at the heart of the recycling industry. And so today on Living Planet, we're playing episode one, The Body, where the team sets out to find out who the boy was and whether his death could be linked to Britain.
Please note, this episode includes graphic descriptions of injuries and death that may not be suitable for all listeners.
It's an unusually warm late autumn Sunday in Istanbul in Turkey. Cafes overflow, tourists throng the mosques, young couples take selfies at the edge of the Bosphorus. The tea is flowing, and a pleasant evening lies ahead.
I was told by a contact to go there on a Sunday when the factories are all closed.
That's Adnan Khan, a Canadian journalist who lives there. Normally he'd be in the cafes too, chatting about the heady politics of the day or playing backgammon. But today, he's following a lead, heading to a part of the city most people never see.
He jumps on a tram and the sounds of teacups and ferries fade until he's in Cebeci, the raw working heart of Istanbul.
This really kind of grungy, rough kind of industrial neighbourhood. It's something out of Mad Max or something.
There are junkyards, rusted shipping containers, even packs of wild dogs. Squat buildings, dust and dirt intermingle everywhere.
It's post-apocalyptic, to be honest, is the way to put it.
He knows where he's going. It's his third or fourth visit to a particular plastic recycling plant here. He arrives to find the familiar, huge metal sliding door.
You know, just even striking the door is like this, it makes this loud banging noise.
Three refugee workers, all teenage boys, quickly let him in.
I mean, it's just stained walls, piles of plastic everywhere. The ceiling is collapsing and there's leakage. It's something out of Saw.
That's Saw as in the torture horror film, so, you know, not a rave review. The boys lead him through and begin chatting. They guide Adnan to the small windowless box room where they sleep. He's got to know them after a chance encounter, and he's intrigued by the world they work and live in. Their boss is away today, so they seem up for talking. And here's my favourite detail. Adnan has come armed with a full roast chicken.
I would always bring them lunch, so I'd bring them chicken, a whole chicken every Sunday.
So yeah, they're literally chewing the fat. When one of the boys takes out his phone and shows Adnan a picture, one that will occupy him for years to come.
So we were sitting around, just sort of had finished eating lunch, and we're just talking about life in general. And then the youngest of them, he was scrolling through his phone, and he just stops, turns his phone around, and he shows me this picture of this dead body.
It's a picture of what seems to be a boy's body, grotesquely ripped apart.
His legs were missing. His face looked somewhat contorted, like it had been broken in some way. And there was just this moment of silence.
It was a corpse hidden in the waste.
What's happening here?
This is a story about recycling and the awful world it hides.
It looks nasty.
Just fucking crazy.
A place where crime and desperation and global politics collide.
They are very bad person. They are very dangerous people.
Waste crime is the new narcotics.
It all starts with two questions. Who was the boy? and what really happened to him. From N's report in De Groene Amsterdammer, we're Dan Ashby and Lucy Taylor, and this is Boy Wasted. Episode 1, The Body.
For this podcast, we've decided to do something relatively unusual. Assemble a team of award-winning investigative journalists to work together. Dan and I are married to each other and to investigating the global waste trade. We're environment journalists, and a date for us is going to a landfill.
Finding out about this story has been a real eye-opener.
It's been a crazy story following this so far. You know, that the waste system can be complex and there's lots of issues.
We'll be working with the ENDS report writers Tess Colley and Pippa Neal to look into Britain's connections to this story.
I've been sort of investigating deeper and deeper into this sort of sector, this especially the unregistered, unlicensed.
And we've all teamed up with Adnan Khan, the journalist you heard. He lives partly in Turkey and has spent years looking into this.
Yeah, I'll clap just for Adnan's. Great. OK, interesting. We've got Pippa.
So, yeah, Avengers Assembled.
So, hi, guys. Yeah, first of all, let's just intro ourselves. We are Dan and Lucy.
We're jumping on an early video call, and we want to begin with that photo that Adnan was shown. It was taken in 2022.
So I've sent the photo to you on WhatsApp. Would you mind sharing it?
Right, so yeah, a bit of a trigger warning now. It's actually worse than I thought. So I'm just going to share screen. It's pretty horrendous, isn't it?
We'll take a few seconds to take it in.
Oh my God.
Christ. That's awful.
There's a concrete yard with piles of plastic, and lying on the ground is the body. It's mutilated. The person's legs are missing, his face half crushed. His arms are bent into a broken, unnatural position. It's hard to tell what age he was, possibly a teenager, but we're not sure. But the body is lying in a plastic recycling plant, so a horrible thought jumps to mind.
The potential cause of death here. We're talking about either a shredder or a compactor, right? I mean, I don't know, Tess and Pippa, you've done a lot of reporting on waste. These are quite destructive. The idea of a human falling into either of those is quite awful, really.
No, it's like horror movie kind of scale stuff. These are the huge industrial machines made to destruct. It sends a shiver down my spine, honestly.
Compactors are big, 2 or 3 metres high and wide. You feed plastic into the top and it's all slammed together with powerful hydraulic rams. Thousands of bits of bottles or bags or whatever you've thrown away can be crushed into these big cubes of plastic called bales, ready to be dumped or transported. But a person being trapped in one? It doesn't bear thinking about. You can see the trauma of it all over the body. After the call, Lucy and I take stock.
I find that really shocking, seeing that picture.
I was struck by just the awful loneliness of it. He's died this really scary, quite painful way. You know, it's stuff of nightmares. His body is just lying amid trash in a country that he's not from, potentially not from. We don't know. It was this vignette, like he was part of the waste, you know, just to be thrown out.
Yeah. Yeah, very sad.
I just feel like we have to find out who this person is, and weirdly, we are the only ones who might be able to tell his story.
There's a reason this mystery body is relevant to you, and it's because of where it happened. You may have weighed up a package holiday to Turkey, or visited Istanbul's Ottoman palaces and cobbled streets. Maybe you've just seen Turkey in the news. A powerful country that's a conduit for millions of migrants, many heading for the EU. And with political tensions that occasionally boil over. Either way, what Turkey does affects the UK and Europe.
But Turkey is also award-winning. That's the First Lady, Ermin Erdogan, talking in one of her many, many speeches about Turkey's role in plastic recycling. Here's the ENDS Report journalist Tess.
It's actually been, in the last few years, say last 5 years, been really trying to portray itself as this big waste environmental hero in many ways.
And it's been great for the Erdogan brand.
And this was a big campaign, and she's gone on to win awards from places like the UN for it.
It's given them global credibility. The Erdogans now teach the rest of the world how to do it.
She delivered an address at the International Day of Zero Waste event in Nairobi in Kenya, so they like to talk about it.
And all of that has won over the UK and some EU countries too, like Germany and the Netherlands. Turkey has promoted its credentials so much that Britain often packs off its recycling to Rotterdam en route to Turkey. The UK and Europe actually celebrate it because Turkey is a member of the OECD, a club of countries designated as economically advanced and therefore, in theory, more reliable. Here's Tessa's fellow reporter, Pippa.
Turkey became this home to waste exports from around the world, but especially from the UK. We know the UK is one of the biggest waste exporters to Turkey.
It's an industry worth millions of pounds and a part of the Turkish presidential brand. It's great for Turkey. It's convenient for Britain and Europe. But a mystery body among that? That could be really, really inconvenient.
In the days and weeks after Adnan was given the photo, he spoke to many people and heard a lot of crazy stories. We're going to work through them in this series because rabbit holes just seem to grow everywhere. But there's a few important facts he did find out right from the start. Firstly, the body was that of an Afghan refugee to Turkey, one of thousands of people who fled the aftermath of the Taliban's return in 2021. Adnan also learned the body was found in a recycling plant belonging to a businessman called Jumil Anemli. I'm going to keep coming back to him. But for now, all you need to know is that he's a prominent businessman who even helped market Turkish recycling to Europe.
This is a big event in Europe, and Turkey is trying to send its sort of representatives there to try to make connections, to make networks. And basically, Mr. Anemli was there to represent Turkey.
But here's the thing. When the body was found, Mr. Anemli said he had no idea who the boy was and what happened.
The owner of the factory never saw this guy, and he was...
One theory was that the refugee was fleeing police and hid inside the machinery. Adnan, it sounds extreme that police might be chasing refugees in Turkey, but is that something that would happen?
I mean, it's possible. Turkey was really trying to get rid of Afghan refugees as much as possible. They were being rounded up, deported by the thousands. It's absolutely possible that somebody could be running from the police. At that time, it was a really bad time for Afghans.
We also know that the police were called to the scene, though nobody really had any idea what they concluded. So that's where we all start, with a strange story and a lot of questions.
I am recording. Yep, all good.
Yeah, so... We spend weeks going over leads, making calls, gathering whatever we can.
Like I said, we're speculating. We weren't able to get any sort of hard evidence on that.
Yeah, okay. We might use... And Adnan begins knocking on doors in the industrial area, Jebeji, where the body was found.
I am not having a lot of luck.
It's an intense, noisy district, full of plants that deal with the dodgier, unsorted or unrecyclable European waste. It's probably not what you're imagining when you see that shiny recycling logo on your plastics. There are litter-strewn Turkish industrial yards, a district with the constant smell of acrid plastic in the air. The workers here aren't used to journalists or much scrutiny at all. So Adnan often gets the cold shoulder. Even the wildlife avoids him.
Crows aren't happy I'm here. They wander in a different direction a bit.
Some of the workers do chat. But when he raises the story of the body, they say they've never heard of it.
I've never heard of it. Okay.
Adnan's translator wonders whether people are scared to talk.
He's kind of scared to see in their face, right?
They're very nervous about it.
Yeah.
But I understand. On one occasion, a local factory boss finds Adnan talking to workers and tells him to come upstairs to a dingy concrete room. It's like a low-quality gangster film. Upstairs, it's the same line. He hasn't heard of the body and there's nothing to see in Jebeji. Afterwards, Adnan is sceptical.
He didn't tell.
You think he knew? Which one?
No. Yeah, upstairs.
Yeah. And the scary one, the mafia guy.
Eventually, Adnan decides to head to the plant where the body was found.
Let's go to the factory and see what's happening there now. Is he the boss of this factory? Or?
He's
the owner.
But it's all changed hands. There's no sign of the former owner, Mr. Nemli. He sold up 8 months after the body was found. The new boss tells Adnan that Mr. Nemli made enough money and moved on.
We decide we need help, so Adnan talks to lawyers, journalists and activists, anyone really with expertise in unusual deaths. But it's not easy. The political atmosphere is getting more tense, more heated. Tens of thousands of people have begun protesting against the authoritarian government, and the authorities are arresting all sorts of people.
So, this message from Adnan... Mm. Hi guys, some unsettling news. The local journalist I'm working with was arrested. Oh man, this is getting serious.
We get Adnan on the phone.
It's something I just literally found out about this morning. So how it all basically played out was about a week and a half ago.
It turns out the journalist was arrested because of his work on a different story. But the authorities likely now know about our investigation.
Is it possible there's bad apples within the authorities who might find out about our investigation?
Yeah, that's my concern right now, because we did talk about the investigation. It is also on paper because I sent him the outline of what I need him to do. So I have some concern. I mean, the Turkish authorities, you know, they cast...
Journalists are always balancing the risks against the pursuit of truth. But right now, the risks are rising and we're no closer to knowing what happened. So we focus on getting something big that may help. Access to the police's case file. We know that they came to the scene, so what did they find? Only dedicated lawyers are allowed to access them in Turkey, so Adnan asks one to help. But after a few days, they call him to say, nobody can find the file.
They told me that they cannot find the case file.
Even in the chaotic world of Turkey's legal system, it's strange.
Somewhere in between, like a pending situation. That was even odd for me as well.
That's very unusual, right? I mean, even the people at the prosecutor's office were confused, right, about this? I mean, this was all very unusual.
In my point of view, that is completely weird.
We need the file, though. It contains forensic evidence, witness statements, potentially the whole story about the body in the trash.
This is all the stuff that should be in the forensic report, and if we can just get a hold of that somehow, it would answer a lot of questions for us.
Adnan and the lawyer get a bit obsessed with it. There's a sense of outrage on behalf of this body.
If someone is not able to fight for themselves, basically, then we have to find a way to fight with them.
The lawyer tries their best, but eventually is forced to move on to other work.
It goes on for weeks, months. Adnan calls more and more people for help, but eventually there's a breakthrough.
Okay, yeah, this is it.
Should I just knock?
Yeah, just knock. She keeps it locked.
Oh, makes sense.
Merhaba,
merhaba.
He arrives at the office of one of Istanbul's most seasoned lawyers. Beren Demir welcomes in Adnan and his translator. She's a short woman with a kind face that has a steely edge to it. She spent decades dealing with the authorities, looking into strange deaths, and she's agreed to help us. She's got good news. She's seen the police case file.
Oh, wow.
Thank you so much for doing the going to courthouse for us. Was it difficult to find?
Beren was only allowed to take notes from the file, so now she's relaying them. She remembers the moment she finally saw the boy's identity. We've translated her answers into English.
Yes, there was an ID in the child's pocket.
Police found an ID for Arafullah Fuzli, an undocumented Afghan migrant. It's only a name, but it feels like a big moment. We might now be able to find out who this boy, Arafullah, really was. Who knew him? What happened to him? Even though Beren refers to him as a child, his ID reveals he would have been 22 years old when he died. But undocumented migrants often have false IDs, and the ID said his mother was the same age, which is obviously impossible. So we're none the wiser. Beren tells Adnan there's more, though. She read the forensic report into how Arafullah was discovered. It makes for something out of some sort of dark crime film.
The legs were severed from the knees. They were found inside the bale.
Mr. and Emily's staff apparently cut open a bale of plastic and found two human legs inside. After that, they searched the premises until they found the rest of Arafullah's body in the compactor, that huge industrial pressing machine used to crush plastic.
The rest of the body was discovered inside the compactor. Somehow, his torso must have fallen in.
Inside the machine it was found, it was there?
Yeah, the upper body was found inside the machine.
Yes. Oh, wow, so maybe he fell forward into the machine.
Police were called to the scene and started interviewing the staff, but Beren noticed something odd in their witness statements. They all gave the same one-line answer to investigators.
All three said they never saw him and didn't know him. The police said, "Who is this? How did he come here?" And they said, "We have no idea." They didn't use any other words. They seem to have memorized it. There are only four sentences in total.
It made Beren wonder whether they'd rehearsed the answers to cover up a different story. Were they scared or hiding something? There was one last piece of evidence that changes the whole story. There was a glove on Arafullah's hand.
The prosecutor concludes the body had work gloves on and someone who is unfamiliar with the workplace would not come, operate the machine and fall into it. It was determined that the deceased was also an employee there.
A prosecutor decided that Mr. and Emily was not telling the truth. The case file notes that Arafullah was wearing a work glove, and if he were a stranger, he'd have had no way of accessing the machinery. Arafullah was no mystery body. He was Mr. Nemli's employee.
And the prosecutor was preparing an indictment against him for negligent homicide. The stakes were high, very high. And the prestige of Turkey's multi-million pound recycling sector was at stake. And yet, the case did not progress, and the story remained a secret. 3 years on, there's still no justice for the boy, Arafullah. Why? What really happened on the day he died? That's next time.
Boy Wasted is a Smoke Trail production developed with the support of Journalism Funds Europe for ENDS Report and De Gruyne Amsterdammer. We've approached Jamil and Emily and the Turkish government for their response to our series, but haven't had a reply. The remaining two episodes are available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
That's it for this week. We'll be back with a regular Living Planet episode again next week. Thanks for listening, and bye for now.